Welcome all new and regular listeners. I'm Henrik Palmgren. I hope you're doing well in these uncertain times and that you manage to stay sane in a world that is getting increasingly insane by the minute as they are getting closer and closer to another intervention in Syria and a potential full-on war with Iran. One can't help to question the motives and reasons behind all of this madness. We could get caught up in current events, microanalyze the news, go through the daily updates with a fine-tooth comb, but it wouldn't really solve anything but to keep us busy. We have to look at the bigger picture, I believe, and ask the bigger questions. Zoom out, what are the roots of the problems that we perceive that we are experiencing? What set of beliefs does the people who pull the strings really have? What kind of theology? Is there something wrong with their psychology or maybe even physiology? Well, this radio program is about questioning, understanding, and finding answers wherever they may lead. Mark Passio is behind the website whatonearthishappening.com, which encapsulates many years of his extensive research and investigation into the nature of our shared reality. Through his presentation, videos, and podcasts, he takes one on a journey of self-exploration, examining human consciousness and the way it relates to the universal problem which we currently face as a species. Mark used to be a priest in the Church of Satan and describes how these organizations are filtration centers in search of psychopaths for specific positions of power. These well-connected dark organizations rely on control, which is essential to shape a specific worldview. Today we're also going to talk about the mechanics of natural law. Stay with us for much more. Welcome to Red Eyes Radio, Mark. It's good to talk to you. Thank you for coming on Red Eyes Radio, the program here today. How has your 2012 been so far, Mark?
It's been pretty good so far, Henrik, and I want to say thank you so much for having me on. It's an honor to be here today with you.
You bet. I've been aware of your work for a long time now, actually, and as I said to you before we began here today, I wanted to bring you on for a long time, so this is going to be a treat as well. I wanted to run through, obviously, some of the details of your background, talking about things from your perspective, as
sure.
You've been detailing them. Obviously, you've done lectures and things. You have a great website, whatonearthishappening.com, that have some of your presentations and so forth. But why don't we just run through some of the background for potential newcomers to you and to your work, Mark?
Sure.
Tell us how you got into this, I guess, sir.
Okay, well, I would guess you could say I've always been a curious person and someone who wanted to know things, who wanted to get deep into the nature of things. And I guess you could say that made me a seeker of truth, so to speak. So in my early childhood, I was always raised around religion, not to say that I grew up in any kind of a strict religious background by any stretch of the imagination, but my family is kind of conventional thinkers, and it was just like, you know, this is what you do because this is what we were taught, how we were taught, and it was go along to get along type of mentality. So in bringing me up into a traditional religious faith, namely Catholicism, basically I took on a worldview that was very fearful and was definitely one of mental control, as I consider that all religions generally are, and that's what they're there for. Unfortunately, during my early teens, I had no frame of reference to understand organized religion in the sense that I do now as astrotheology, because this was a topic that I had no knowledge of and no other researchers at that time had ever brought that body of work to my attention. What you could say happened is the feelings that I had for, being deceived into that worldview of fear and that worldview of a deception, as I considered it, is that turned to feelings of resentment and rage. And in that state of emotions, I attempted to find the exact antithesis of those ideologies and worldviews. And that pushed me into looking into the world of the occult. Now, when people hear that word, there's a lot of negative connotations that come with it, and there's a lot of misconceptions that come with it. The word occult is derived from the Latin noun oculus, meaning eye. And the word occult itself comes from the Latin verb occultare, which means hidden from sight or veiled to the eye. So all occult means is hidden from plain sight, not easily seen, something that has been obscured. And that's what this body of knowledge basically is. It's knowledge that has been taken out of the general circulation of humanity, and it has been held or reserved for the elect few who have access to that knowledge. Well, we could talk about what kind of a power differential that creates in society later on, but basically, I went into what would be considered the dark aspects of the occult, meaning keeping knowledge for one's selfish usages and as a power differential over other people who have been deprived of that same knowledge, because ultimately all the knowledge of the occult is about the aspects of the human psyche. It is actually knowledge of ourselves and how we function and what our primary motivations and those types of factors are within the human individual. Well, I got involved in groups like the Church of Satan, the Church of Lucifer, the Order of the Evil Eye, among many other dark occult organizations. Mm-hmm. I was actually appointed a priest within the Church of Satan in the 1990s by Anton LaVey himself before he passed away, I believe, in 1997. So the worldview that I had back then was extremely dark. It was based upon controlling other people, gaining knowledge to use as influence and a mechanism of control over others, and then basically partnering with other people in order to expand upon that knowledge and use it in a more effective way. That's what these occult organizations actually are about. And I call them psychological, I call them filtration centers for people who are actually psychopathic. These are the tendencies that they're looking for. People who are self-focused and don't really care about what they're doing to others. So they can groom them and bring them up into positions of power. Because as I found out through working with these organizations, it's not just isolated individuals. It's people who are connected in just about every institutionalized area of modern life, including politics, law, business, finance, education, medicine, you name it. And it's extensive. The networks that they have in place are actually extensive. And these are the types of individuals I would see at meetings, rituals, etc. So when I started to understand not only what drove me into that arena, which was feelings of resentment, anger, rage at having been lied to, but I also began understanding that this was something much larger than what I had originally envisioned it as. And this was really the fundamental core ideology, Satanism and dark occultism, that lies behind all of the institutions of power and influence that really make up modern day life and modern society. Once I started to understand that it was all about control and it was about injecting this poisonous worldview, which was actually really more poisonous than even a fundamentalist religious worldview, there's a third side. There's a middle ground that is actually deals with the truth about reality and the natural law, which we can get into here today. Mm. But not having had any access to that general framework through people's dedicated research that I had not encountered up to that point, I bought into this poisonous worldview because it is based upon three basic ideologies, three core tenets. That is moral relativism, the idea that there is no such thing as right and wrong. We get to make it up based on our personal likes and preferences, and it's all relative. You know, what's good for us is good. What's bad for us is bad. You know, and if you know, what's good for us is bad for someone else, then, hey, go for it, because it doesn't matter what happens to them. Again, it's a very psychopathic worldview. The second tenet is social Darwinism. The idea of the survival of the most ruthless, not necessarily, you know, the most humane or the most fit in consciousness, anything like that. It's
right.
Just whoever can get a leg up on the other person and exploit that, that differential, go for it, because that's what's going to make you strong, and that's what's, going to, make you survive. So it's that idea of self-preservation above all else, social Darwinism. And the third is something that a lot of people want to ignore, but it's something painful that we need to take a look at, that has existed throughout human history. And it's something that is one of the core ideologies that runs throughout the world of the dark occult, and that is eugenics. These are individuals who believe that they are superior to other people, and that they have ultimately, like a god, the right who gets to live and procreate and who does not. And it's something that forms another, a basic foundational core ideology of the entire belief system of dark occultism, particularly Satanism and dark Luciferianism. So that's where my background came from.
Mm-hmm.
In understanding what those systems of poisoned worldview and ideologies are all about, and how they're actually attempting to inject that worldview into other people so that they create a total control system based on fear, but most of all based on differential knowledge. In other words, those in the know with knowledge controlling other people who lack the knowledge of the human psyche and the knowledge of self, who have no frame of reference, no ability to actually defend themselves against these types of attacks and mind control methodologies which they use against them, because they actually have been kept from the knowledge that those manipulators actually have had all along. So that's my background.
Excellent. It's a very interesting background, because again, you went down this path, obviously, then of becoming a priest in the Church of Satan. And I think it's very interesting too that from my perspective, Mark, I've always seen that the reality in that sense is like a two-party system. And I think that even the Church of Satan in that sense actually is part of this game. And I wanted to ask you, because this was, you went into this direction, basically making a 180, partially then because of your upbringing, but also because of the discoveries that you consequently made about the lies, you know, that you've been subjected to, basically. And so the question there is, how much of a plan do you think that this is to potentially then maybe, I don't know, recruit divergence, if you know what I mean, from an early age, meaning that you have the official word, the exoteric, and then you have the esoteric, the inner world of the occultists. And it's almost like they want to make you to do one of the choices, kind of early on, if you know what I mean. So how much of a plan do you, I mean, it's like telling a teenager, right? Don't do drugs. What are they going to do? Reverse psychology, correct?
It's a perfect dialectic. It's exactly what it is. It's dialectical mechanics, which is basically a mind control technique. You're putting forward something that is basically almost completely ridiculous, the worldview of modern organized religious beliefs and practices, something that people will often see through upon reaching the age of reason, and understand that it's basically farcical, and it's there to control human behavior, but most of all to control human perception, to put perception into a small box, a cubicle, if you will, and say anything outside of this little cubicle, this little box, is off limits for human consumption, for human mental digestion. You don't even look there. That will have the effect of basically pushing people in a way, because they'll realize that this is a farce, that this is something that is there strictly as a means of mental control, and it will push them into often looking for the opposite of that, as happened in my case. And then they'll be all too ready with the poisonous worldview, with the worldview of human nature is something that is just completely, fundamentally horrible. It's always been like that. It's always going to be like that. So you need to come over into this camp where we can show you how you can basically corral these people and control them and herd them and affect their minds when you learn how they work, how the human psyche works enough, that you, then you could have a power differential over them. Mm. Because, after all, they're not really teachable. They're just there to be controlled and to be exploited like animals.
That's right.
Their worldview. And this system works very effectively because it's like, you know, it's like giving the child who doesn't really want to eat their vegetables saying, oh, you have a choice. Would you like mashed potatoes or would you like peas today? And they think that they're making the choice, but really the entire thing is controlled because the parent just wanted them to eat a vegetable regardless of which one they chose with the meal.
Yep.
But giving them that illusion of choice makes them feel like they have some kind of power and they have some kind of a decision about their destiny, when in fact they're being pushed in a similar direction, which is either be a controlled individual or be a controller. Either way, you're playing the game of control.
Yeah, it's true. I've also felt that, you know, Anton LaVey and his gang there have kind of, they have fulfilled a purpose in that sense for anyone that potentially is looking to find evil, if you will, in the world. Okay, I mean, the Church of Satan isn't particularly mainstream, but I mean, most people kind of know that it's there in one sense, but it takes the eyes away from the rest of the gangs out there, as you mentioned before, because there's plenty of, you know, priests, cardinals, even gurus and masons, doctors, lawyers, politicians
right.
that climb up into the, you know, the dark caverns of the occult world. They don't necessarily have to come from the Church of Satan. They're all out there, and these networks connect at the top, right?
They do. It is an interconnected and labyrinthine network that really takes a lot of study in and of itself, even to understand how some of these interconnections take place. The Church of Satan is quite low on that totem pole, in my estimation, from what I've seen, because it simply acts as a psychopathic filtration system at a low level that interacts with the general public in order to bring individuals that they identify as psychopathic up through their ranks and groom them for inclusion in organizations and think tanks at lower levels, okay, that then feed up into what I would consider the globalist hierarchy of control. And that's what the Church of Satan is actually there for. It's to find the people in society who would maybe ordinarily slip through the cracks, and they would not be able to exploit and use their talents and capabilities for their ends, and then to bring them up through those ranks and to groom them for helping them conduct their agenda at a higher level.
Mark, do you know of anybody who has come out from the world of Church of Satan and then later in life maybe attained another position as a politician, let's say, businessman, something like that?
I've stayed in touch with very few individuals from these organizations. There are two. I won't mention them by name because I don't know whether they would want to be included in a discussion like this or their names made public. But there are two individuals that I know who came out of that worldview who were involved. I wouldn't say that they're as vocal as me, and I would also say one of them went toward a religious direction. So this pendulum swung back, the dialectical pendulum swung back, and they went back in the other direction.
Yes, exactly. And that's a really good point, because, again, that's one of the tendencies I wanted to get to here. The people are being played ping pong with, and in most cases, they don't know that there's a third or a fourth or even fifth option out there. You can go whatever direction you want. You don't have to be defined by these rules that the masters of the game has set up for us. But tell us, when you split off from this group, then what happened that made you, you know, break out from this?
Again, just really realizing how connected it was with power and control. Now, I knew that's what it was from the outset, but I thought it was simply on a personal level to be able to use techniques of manipulation against other people to you know, get an edge up on other individuals so maybe you can profit in the world of business or finance, etc. Okay, I didn't realize that it was all about control at a mass scale, ultimately, that these organizations were working with huge international organizations and think tanks and globalist institutions that were attempting to really eradicate human freedom throughout the earth, that it was a war on human life in general, you know? And when I really put that piece of the puzzle together and I realized that this meant the extermination of freedom for all people, it was attempting to create, again, a system where there were no free individuals, where everybody was a master and a slave simultaneously, where there was this hierarchy where wherever you were at in the hierarchy, yeah, you may control some people below you, but you also answered to a master above you. And that didn't really sit quite well with me. I was always an individual who valued my individuality and always wanted more freedom, not freedom to be taken away. Mm. That was there with me inherently from the time I was very young. Unfortunately, that had been suppressed by these different dialectical worldviews, and I finally, I guess you could say, came out of it upon realizing what their master plan was, and I, at that moment, developed a true conscience. The conscience was born in me at that point. I began to care about whether people are free or not. I began to look into what natural law rights are actually about and understand that people don't have a right to manipulate people at these levels, at these mental levels. And they certainly don't have a right to tread all over their natural law rights and attempt to usurp their freedoms and take their rights away from them. So upon realizing that and developing that level of conscience within myself, I definitely pulled back from all of those organizations and started attempting to put this information out about how they operate and help people to understand their mind control methodologies that they're employing at all levels of our life. Upon making it known that I was going to be stepping back from these positions, the individuals in these groups could care less. They didn't express any outrage or hatred or attempting to do anything to me. The attitude was one of complete indifference. The attitude was one that we have people so where we want them. Go and try to do your worst and enjoy banging your head against the wall for the rest of your life, because who's going to believe you? They actually, one of them actually said to me, a gentleman actually said to me, even if we came forward and told people the level of control we have over their minds, they wouldn't believe us. That's how perfect
our control
is. That's a lot of hubris. They're a little overconfident, because I don't think they realize that there is an awakening taking place. I would like to see it happen a lot faster, but it is beginning. And it's only a matter of time before it becomes a snowball-like effect. And I think they overplayed their hand, and I think they were far too confident in how perfect their control system is.
Mm-hmm. A little bit later, Mark, we're going to get into talking more about natural law, some of the other aspects. I want to ask you more about the master plan, how you see things from your perspective unfolding here and where they are taking us in that sense. But before we move on here, Danda, was there anything you learned that actually was of value to you from the Church of Satan? I guess some of these principles that you were taught to exploit them, because this is all what it is. You learn tools, and then obviously it's the application of those tools or that technique that you can either do something good with or something bad with, correct?
To be honest with you, Henrik, they actually understand even the positive aspects of the world of the occult, of this knowledge. They willfully choose to use that as a weapon against other people by continuing to occult it. And again, as I said, to use it as a power differential of those who they keep not in the know, those who they suppress that knowledge from, okay, and sequester it from. So I have often been quoted as saying, until we de-occult this knowledge, in other words, until the knowledge of the occult is no longer occult, until it is brought out into the light of day, and these manipulation techniques are known, and this information has been turned into common sense knowledge, humanity will never be free. We cannot ignore the information of the occult because we think, oh, it's negative. It isn't negative. It's information about how the universe works, how natural law functions, how the human psyche actually functions, and then it's what we do with that knowledge that makes it either good or bad.
Okay.
So the usage determines whether it's used for order and goodness and propagating freedom throughout society, or whether it's used as, again, as I've said, a weapon for power differential advantage and then creating all kinds of chaos, disorder, and ultimately evil with it.
That's right. And then, of course, you have the other dichotomy on the other side, if we take it from the point of view of the church again, that says to most people then, no, don't look at these evil areas of occultism and astrology and everything else, even psychology in one sense. You go mad, don't dance with the devil. You know what I mean, Mark?
Exactly. Even people within the freedom movement will say, oh, I don't want to look into Satanism, or I don't want to look into the dark occult. And I say, well, then you're doing yourself a great disservice because you're not understanding the psychological aspects of your enemy, that you are actually in a war against, whether you want to look at it in that way, that this is a war or it's just an evolutionary progression. Regardless, you're not looking at the psychological factors that are taking place in the minds of the people who are attempting to hold back human evolutionary progress. Without understanding that, it's like trying to play a chess game against an opponent that you know nothing about. You know nothing about his strategies, and therefore you're going to be at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
So we look at both the positive aspects of human consciousness, and we need to look at the negative. We need to understand the methods of control, the methods of mind control, and the ideologies that these people believe in, and in a flawed way and in a fearful worldview way, but nonetheless it's important to understand. I mean, you know, that's their worldview. We have to understand that's the perspective that they're coming from. They're seeing the world in this way and they're acting upon that worldview. That's not negative to look at that in an attempt to understand it, because once we understand it, then we're in a position to do something about it.
That's right. If these are studies, if you will, of our own psyche, if this is about understanding ourselves, and then if we consequently deny ourselves from this knowledge, then we're at a disadvantage, as you say. We can't possibly understand, first of all, ourselves, which is the most important of this, but we can't understand them or why their techniques are working and why they've been so successful. Because, I mean, let's face it, most people are in a trance, and they have, even as you said, an unwillingness to to dig their own heads out of the sand, if you will, and actually begin to realize some of the stuff that's happening to them.
Henrik, that's exactly right. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly what's going on.
So in this world of hierarchy that we have, it's not much different, though, in that sense, of what you described there, from everything from, you know, the boys' club, the eating clubs, and the Freemasonic networks in that sense. What do you see as a way of out of this? Because, again, there's new people being born and bred into these systems all the time, and there seems to be a willingness from the majority to still kind of perpetuate these systems. What do you see beginning to potentially deconstruct some of these hierarchies that are so, such edifices in society, Mark?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you that the way out was easy. I would say that there are techniques that we can all employ that are generally simple, but they all involve a fundamental worldview shift. That's where it really has to begin, with a worldview shift. If you believe that human nature is fundamentally corrupt, if you believe that the value system that we need to base everything that we care about is based on a number, is based on an amount of money, okay? And that being our motivation to do anything, to act in the world, is how much we get paid to do it. If you believe that, you know, this is just how things are and there's some invisible force keeping it like this, you know, that is just punishing us because we're inherently bad, then that's an extremely poisonous worldview that is not going to be conducive for any kind of positive change. And so many people see the world in that way. They see the world from a perspective of lack, from a perspective of scarcity, and ultimately from a perspective of fearfulness. And if we keep our minds in fear, we're always in the lower part of the brain, in the R complex of the brain. We're never really going up into the higher parts of the brain that deal with the higher emotions and rational thought and behavior and true logic and true reason and true compassion, okay? And we're never really going to be able to see the patterns that are taking place before us in that kind of a worldview. So until we fundamentally shift our worldview, anything that we possibly propose as a solution is not going to be very effective. We need to shift the worldview from one of selfishness, only caring about the self and maybe our extended family, to one of realizing that we're all on this spaceship Earth together. We're all basically in the same position with the same basic needs, the same requirements for life, and we need to understand that as one individual suffers or is experiencing injustice, all are. That's the level of connectedness that we all share. And we need to realize, from that perspective, we are all one. Okay. Yes, we have to respect the individual aspects of each human being on the planet, and not treat ourselves in this collectivist mind state either. But we have to understand that our actions affect everyone around us. And if we pull back and see the world from that global perspective, that global worldview, not globalist worldview, but a holistic worldview, realizing that humanity, again, all shares the same basic needs, the same basic desires for peace, prosperity, and evolutionary progress, and we extend that courtesy and those rights to all other individuals, and let that individuality express, and not try to stifle it, not try to control, because we don't have the right to control anything except our own thoughts, our own emotions, and our own actions, the three aspects of our consciousness. We need to unify those such that we are a being that thinks, feels, and acts, and there's no contradiction between those three aspects of consciousness. When we shift our fundamental worldview to that positive way of thinking, then whatever solutions we propose from that point are going to be very effective, and you're going to see change happen at a very quick scale, at a very quick pace.
Mm-hmm. And the majority of nations or governments, institutions, and occult fraternal orders, what have you, business, etc., are violating these unwritten laws all the time, basically. None is innocent in that sense. Do you believe that there is a a force in the world that is in some way aware of this, that this is now potentially, Mark, why we're seeing such a calamity in the world, that things are beginning to fall apart in most in terms of the financial world, in terms of business, and from my point of view, hopefully many of the other institutions out there as well, because they have for such a long time now violated these unwritten laws. What do you think, Mark?
There are so many egregious violations of inherent natural law rights of human beings that all of these violations, all of these infractions against the natural law have built up and formed a quantum effect that is basically creating mass disorder throughout our society, throughout our global society. Until we as a people, as a collective mass mind, if you will, okay, the morphogenetic field, you could call it, as other researchers like Rupert Sheldrake have referred to it. Until that basic mind state of humanity shifts toward an understanding of what our actual natural law rights are and what they are not, more importantly even, what our rights are not, what we do not have the right to do under natural law, which is moral principles, okay? Whether it is right or wrong needs to be understood. All actions need to be gauged on that basis. Not what we think we'll get as a result, not whether we think it'll make our situation better in the short term, okay? But strictly on the basis of whether it is moral or immoral to take that action, on whether you as an individual have a right to perform that action toward another individual, or you do not have that right because it harms another individual in some way. See, that's what we have to understand about natural law. It doesn't have anything to do with our likes or dislikes. It is something that is inherent to creation itself. It is based upon nature. It is based upon reality. It is based upon truth. It's not caused by humankind. We did not bring the laws of morality into existence. And whether anybody believes that these laws exist or not is actually irrelevant, because we are bound by these creation laws, and they are actually determining, they are governing what is happening to us as a whole. Because again, as I said, it's a quantum buildup effect. As more people live in harmony with natural law principles, you will see order. You will see goodness flourish. You will see all kinds of things that are conducive to the evolutionary development of our species come into fruition, come into manifestation. The more violations and the more trampling of natural law rights of individuals that take place throughout our society, the more grave disorder we're going to see in society, the more chaos
going to result. And see, this is a very important point as well, because as society, in one sense, then have been, first of all, feeding us that there is a level of terrorist activity out there, which is causing all of society to basically reform itself and take precautions, and hence then also limit the ability of normal people, if we can say that, those who are not terrorists, to encroach so much on their way of life that they eventually become, you know, almost radical, because their freedom is being diminished all the time so much, to the extent that eventually they will lash back. It's like the governments who are doing all this are doing it to themselves. They're actually building this infrastructure up at the same time as they're creating the terrorism that they say that they're trying to protect us from. It's very, I don't know if they understand this at all, or if this is just a stupid machine, you know, paper pushing people that are just going ahead with this. But on some level, I can't help to think that that's kind of the part of the game a little bit. What do you think, Mark?
The people who are really bringing that total system of total control of totalitarianism in upon us at a rapid pace are the low-level individuals who simply follow the chain of obedience to carry out orders that they themselves have not taken the personal responsibility to gauge whether or not those actions that they will be taking are in harmony with moral principles. And as such, those individuals at the bottom level of that chain of obedience really don't have any moral principles. People will say, oh, yeah, they're basically moral people because they want to help. They want to do the right thing. They want to see order happen in society. But unless you understand the mechanics, the actual mechanistic methodologies of natural law, how this is something that works a certain way and always works that way. It never changes. That's why it's called a law. You're always bound by it. That's why it's called a law. It's not something that changes at the whims of likes or dislikes or preferences. It's something that man didn't put in place, like gravity. Gravity always works a certain way as long as you're on planet Earth. You're always in that gravitational field of this planet. Gravity obeys a law. It works a certain way. It can be calculated. It can be known that it's in effect. And whether anybody believes in that law or not doesn't matter. It is binding while you're here on the Earth. So is natural law, but this is a universal law. It works everywhere the same way, regardless of where you go in the three-dimensional universe in which we live. And it's basically the law of attraction. It's the law of, as we put out, so we will receive back. And this doesn't just mean for an individual. This means for a whole society as well. Again, it's a quantum effect. It's a quantum means amount in Latin, the word quantum. And basically, that's what it is. The more buildup of this effect that you have, you're going to see it at a grander and grander scale throughout all aspects of society. It's the idea that we basically reap what we sow. What we put out into the universe is the dynamic that we're going to get back. So if we fundamentally respect other people's natural law rights to do as they want, so long as they are not harming other individuals, and respect the non-aggression principle, meaning if someone is not actively harming someone else or defrauding them or thieving from them, okay, you don't have a right to take violent action against them, to initiate coercion against them. There's four basic natural law violations. Okay, they're all based upon theft. You have murder, rape, theft, and trespass. In some form, they all boil down to taking what is not yours. Murder, you're taking a life that doesn't belong to you. Okay, rape, you're taking sexual freedom and freedom of choice that doesn't belong to you. Theft, you're taking property that doesn't belong to you. Trespass, you're taking security of another individual's lair that they happen to be using while they're alive from them that you don't have a right to take. So ultimately, all violations of natural law come down to theft. And I would say, ultimately, every one of these violations come down to you're taking rights away from other individuals. They have a right to life, okay? They have a right to express their sexuality with who they will. They have a right to use certain things that they have acquired, okay, that we would call property, okay? And it all has to do with usage, that we're actually using those things. We do have a right to security of our person. So these are rights that we inherently possess that are inalienable rights. And people who – there's nobody who has the rights to take these away. You can't grant a right to do wrong. There's no such thing, okay? But yet we see these violations happen constantly from people in positions of, quote, authority.
Yeah.
This religion of authority is believed in by people. And they, in this belief system, which is a religion, which is something that holds us back from our natural evolutionary progress in consciousness. That's how I define a religion, because it comes from the Latin verb religare, which means to tie back or to hold back or to thwart from forward progress. And in this religion called authority, people believe that other individuals can be granted imaginary rights. They can be granted the right to do a wrong, the right to take rights from other individuals, the right to take property from other individuals, and even the right to take life from other individuals if they do not agree to comply with these arbitrary dictates of authority called man's law. Okay? Man's laws are arbitrary dictates that are subject to the whims of the legislators and are subject to changing at different times,
yep,
changing in different places, because they're based on moral relativism. The idea that something can be right to do in one place and wrong to do in another place. There is no such thing. Either you have a right to perform an action, and that right is universal and should be respected anywhere you go in the cosmos, not just on the earth, or you don't have a right to perform that action. Based on the knowledge that not having a right means the action, if you took it, would harm someone else or would violate their rights. That's why we need to understand rights in the apophatic sense, meaning it's better to understand them in the sense of what they are not. Not to try to define what a right is, but to know what a right is through knowing what a wrong is, through knowing what we do not have the right to do. Apophatic inquiry is actually a much more powerful methodology of acquiring knowledge, because in looking at the negative, you know, okay, I know that's not one of my rights, because taking that action would harm another, defraud another, or infringe upon their own natural law rights, and I don't have the right to do that. So everything that doesn't fall into that category would be reserved to me or anyone else as a right. That's what apophatic inquiry is all about, and it's a powerful method of knowledge discovery, but most people have never heard of it.
That's right. Most of these things as well, in terms of at least the ability to defend ourselves and to have access to land, basically, to live off of and on, these are things that are slowly in our society being taken away as well. I've linked up articles about United Nations gun control, for instance, even land grabbing through fraudulent environmental laws. It comes to us also in this packet or package of being for the better good of the whole, if you know what I mean, Mark. This is the right thing to do. It's more you know, altruistic. Remove all the guns, you know, because then there won't be any violence, basically. That's what they come to us with. When in actuality we know that's not how it actually works. You know, if you take away the guns, for instance, then only the outlaws will have the guns. we can see that it's been sold to us as well, many of these violations, as being the right thing to do, right?
Of course, because evil always has to come in the guise of goodness. If evil comes at you directly, you'll recognize it for what it is. It has to convince you that it's doing something that's good, because people strive to do the good ultimately. That is what human nature is. We want to strive to do the good, but evil comes wrapped in this attractive package, proclaiming itself as good. And as you said, they say, oh, well, wouldn't it be great to get rid of all the guns? Well, it would be a wonderful world if nobody ever needed to pick up and use a gun. But at the same time, the world we're living in right now isn't the world where everyone is of that consciousness and willing to respect the natural law rights of others.
That's
and
right.
people do need the mechanisms for protecting themselves. Forget about just the average psychopath on the street. We need that right to defend ourselves from the incursions of tyrannical governments who, it's just a quick search on the internet to find out what has followed almost every gun confiscation that has ever happened in modern human history. It has been followed by a mass extermination of the population by the local government in the region where the gun confiscation took place. And this is what a lot of the people who are anti-gun don't understand has happened throughout history. And in their naivete regarding this dynamic, they would, in the name of goodness, as you've said, be all too willing to hand over total control to the state, who would be the only people left having guns, and outlaws, people who don't respect natural law rights of people to begin with, the psychopathic individuals that dwell among the general population. But ultimately, the psychopaths in government would be the only people who have access to any large amounts of weapons and could easily turn them onto the population to quell any level of political dissent that they happen to deem they didn't want to even tolerate for another moment.
Yeah.
And it's happened throughout history. All you have to do is make a study of it.
That's right. People don't have a sense of the history anymore. It's being rewritten all the time, of course, and things are being omitted. But if people had a little bit more history lessons, they wouldn't fall so easily for it. But unfortunately, that's not the world we live in. There's another problem, if you will, that I've been struggling with that I'd like to ask you, and this goes back to this idea of understanding the laws of morality that you mentioned before, because the question for me is, are we all really on the same level? Can this agreement be made? Because if some people don't have this understanding, I don't personally believe that this is something can be taught. You can't be taught morals. Either you get it or have it inherently in you, or you don't. And this kind of goes back to this problem that you mentioned before, that we have certain elements within society. Again, then it doesn't mean that they are anything less in terms of value, if we even can put that term on it. But it means that some people are different. They might come from a psychopathic point of view. They might even be sick people in that sense. What happens then, do you think? What if we can't make that agreement?
We definitely need to understand the dynamic of human psychopathy. If we don't understand psychopathy, we're missing a gigantic piece of the puzzle as to why the world has been worked into the condition that it currently exists in. Psychopathy is a genetic disorder, okay? It's something that actually results in a being that is born without the ability to empathize with any other being. In other words, part of the limbic system of the brain, the part of the brain that basically makes the feeling of emotions in the physiology possible through the kinds of chemicals and peptides that it actually generates, okay, is not functioning upon birth. Through whatever activation of a gene that is responsible for this genetic condition, the being is born without the ability to feel, for all intents and purposes. This makes them completely unlike other human beings alive, and they recognize that at a young age, and therefore they realize that they're so different that they will be ostracized for not feeling, because the general human species has this capacity and values it as well as it should be valued, because it is our emotional guidance system. It is our compass of conscience, you could say. That's what our emotions are. Okay, they guide us to do the right thing and not to harm others. So in realizing they don't have that capacity, I mean, it's not even like a desire or, you know, just wanting to feel it. It's like an amputee who doesn't have hands, you know. He can't type on a keyboard, not because he may not want to, but because he doesn't have the capacity to, because he no longer has hands. That's what we're talking about. It is a complete amputation of a capability, and therefore they realize that they have to, in order to even get by in life, in order to be accepted at all at any level by other individuals who would see this as a monstrous condition, and indeed in many ways it is a monstrous condition, in order to mimic get along with other people in society, or pretend to get along with them, they have to mimic the range of human emotions which they don't have. So they become very good actors. They become very good people. They become very good at influencing other people, at manipulating. okay? Because they realize that's the only way that they're going to be accepted at any level in society, because basically they don't have any feelings for any of their actions, what the consequences of any of their actions are toward other individuals. And that's psychopathy, but it's a very small percentage of the human population. Some people put it at about 2%. Other people will argue that it's even less than that. Some researchers have placed it as high as 4%. I haven't really seen higher estimates.
See,
that's a very high number.
But even 1%, think about it. That's a huge number. We're 7 billion people on the planet right now. What is that, 1%? So is that 70 million then? What is that? I'm bad at math. Maybe you can figure that out, Mark. But it's still it's a lot of people. That's my point.
It would be 7 million.
People. 7 million. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Yep.
No, 70 million. You're right. 70 million. Right. Yes. So that's a lot of people on the planet to be psychopathic, even if the number is 1%. So, unfortunately, there's a secondary form of psychopathy that is learned, or I shouldn't even say learned. It is instilled. Okay. And this is instilled by conditions. The conditioning aspects of what our environment dictates, the current environmental conditions in which we are living, okay? So the mental influence of other people can influence secondary psychopathy. Actual mind control techniques that are willfully directed against other individuals can influence secondary psychopathy, okay? Training techniques like outcome-based education or military or police training can induce secondary psychopathy. So secondary psychopathy is a form of a learned behavior that is dependent upon the environmental conditions in which a being is dwelling. And unless those conditions are changed, it's very difficult for an individual in a state of secondary psychopathy to heal the imbalances that are done to the human brain, particularly the limbic system and the neocortical brain, because ultimately what this condition of secondary psychopathy does is it destabilizes the neocortical functions of the human brain, which govern compassion and reason. And therefore the person cannot really see true logical, they can't engage in true logical thinking, they can't engage in any real compassion, because those parts of the brain are actually malfunctioning. It is a form of a brain disorder, and unfortunately, many more people than just genetic psychopaths, which is a small percentage, are under the condition of secondary psychopathy in our society. I would say that number's in the hundreds of millions, possibly. So we've worked ourselves into a position of not caring. And many people try to numb the full range of human emotions out because they realize how uncomfortable the world that we live in happens to be at the current time in history. And they don't want to feel their emotions. So they get hooked on like things like SSRI, antidepressant medications, and they're numbing their emotions out by an act of their own choice, which is a dangerous thing to do. But to go back to the original question, is I do believe that not with genetic psychopaths, it is not possible to teach them. They literally have the part of them that empathizes. It is not present. It is amputated. So to waste time on a true psychopath is pointless. But secondary psychopathy can be cured if the person is put into somewhat healthy surroundings, meaning healthy mental influences. And over time, the worldview can be fundamentally shifted, and eventually the damage that is actually done, the physical brain damage that is actually done to the limbic brain and neocortical brain, can be reversed. The brain is very plastic in that regard. It is very able to come back from even some physical damage that is done to it over years of abuse through taking in the wrong mental food, if you will. And it can be reversed, but it can be a painstaking process, and it is one that the individual at some level of their being would have to have some form of desire or will to carry out. Again, if someone's completely resistant and they've totally given over their mind, and totally given over their personal responsibility to change and grow, It would be very difficult to even take a secondary psychopath out of that condition. But if the person has even an inkling to truly want to do the right thing, not to just do what they've been taught or what they've been commanded, people can be brought out of the condition with care and attention. They can be brought out of the condition of secondary psychopathy.
We're going to take a little break here in a little while. I want to obviously mention your website, talk a little bit about some of the things you have on there. But first of all, I slightly want to backtrack on that because I think it's a hugely important point that you make, that this is could be attributed to a brain trauma, basically. This is about the neurological pathways that are created in the brain when you do a certain behavior. And you did a really good video pertaining to, for instance, soldiers or military personnel, police, what have you, that they also end up in this kind of environment, if you will, and hence also, I mean, the generals, those in charge of armies, they don't want to have emotionally charged people running around on the battlefields. They want to have total, in that sense, brain dead robots that just follow orders, that have an emotional life or body that is completely cut off, in that sense. This also actually goes back to the ideas of birth trauma, potentially, that we talked with another guest a while back about as well, that this, it might have to do with mind control. But what we're potentially seeing here, Mark, is that we have more and more of this type of behavior kind of infecting, if you will, the rest of society, the rest of people out there, and this is now kind of gaining momentum almost, and like a sickness, like a brain disease in that sense, this is now spreading. It's horrific when you think about it.
It's practically a communicable disease because, again, it is all determined upon what other people are putting out into the field of consciousness as mental and emotional food. And we take those influences into ourselves, whether we are aware of them or not, and they help to shape our makeup as an individual. And only really the strongest or perhaps most spiritually evolved people. I don't discount the possibility that there are inherently spiritually strong individuals on this planet who can resist that negative influence around them and come up through that regardless of how poisoned the mental and emotional atmosphere of their environment may happen to be. But for the vast majority of people, they're easily influenced in that regard. And like you said, when soldiers go into the trauma-based mind control training that they are subjected to through basic training, because let's face it, that's what it is. It's trauma-based mind control. You are taking people, sequestering them from the rest of society, and subjecting them to extreme physical and emotional stress, feeding them a diet that is not conducive to good brain development, subjecting them to little to no sleep in some regard, and controlling every aspect of their life to a point where they're afraid to breathe. That level of trauma and physical stress is going to do damage to the brain. I mean literally.
Yeah.
Things are going to happen in the emotional guidance system of the human brain and in the rational thought function of the human brain. And honestly, that's what it's designed to do. It's designed to do just that because, as you said, they want psychopathic individuals. They don't want anybody who's going to look at another human being and say, should I pull that trigger and end another human life just because I've been told to. They want an automaton. They want an unquestioning, unfeeling robot to do their bidding. That's the ultimate goal of anybody in higher levels of the military. And the people who are sending these people off to kill and die for them and their agenda, regardless of whether they know what lower level individuals know what that agenda happens to be or not. And it all comes down to wanting to hand over responsibility for one's own actions. That's what it ultimately comes down to fall into that level of manipulation. Ultimately comes down to a weakness within the self that is based upon lack of self-respect and fear-based thinking. Those two things are what drives people into institutions like that. In many ways, no different than what drove me into institutions that I got involved in at a younger age. Mm. I just so happened to have the spiritual fortitude to survive that journey, not become totally psychopathic, although I would say that I was most certainly secondarily psychopathic. And to emerge on the other side, seeking truth and seeking solutions and remedy for that situation, which you eloquently said is actually spreading like a disease through society at the current time frame in history in which we are living. That's why it's so important to recognize what psychopathy is, to understand its signs, and to realize how people can be falling into lower levels of this disease without even realizing it. We have to be, we have to let our emotions be our guidance system, be our compass for developing insight into what is really going on in the world, but most of all, developing insight into what is going on within each one of us, turning that mirror inward and looking at the true aspects of self, which is the all-important information that we need to understand.
That's right. There's a willingness here from the participants to surrender and to give themselves away to a system that appears to be stronger, you know, than yourself. This is basically escapism, avoiding responsibility. And this is one point I want to talk more with you about after the break. But first of all, I want to get out the website. And the website is basically a very good question. What on earth is happening? .com. Tell us about your website, Mark. Some of the videos you have up there, some other material on your website, and what people can find there.
Sure. Yeah, I have a few sections up there. There's a news section, which I announce anything that I happen to be doing or events that are taking place, maybe presentations or radio shows that I'm appearing on. There's a video section up there, which has, I believe, over 16 hours of video footage of me giving various presentations about this type of material. The radio show page is where you can listen to my weekly radio show on Oracle Broadcasting. And I do a radio show there for 2 hours weekly, every Sunday from, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern time. A great network. You should definitely check it out and listen in, on Sunday to my show. And then there's a podcast section, which all of the shows that I've, done in the past are archived on the site. And I believe there's, over 90 of them now. I think there's 92 podcasts up there, that are always available for free download. You could put them on any digital music player or play them right on your computer in your browser. And there's a resource section, which I have links to tons of material that could be studied for a lifetime. So that's basically what the site entails. I've put a lot of work into it, and basically it's whatonearthishappening.com, and check it out and see what you think and start making your way through the material, particularly the podcasts.
That's right. WhatOnEarthIsHappening.com. Check out some of the great material there to find out more. Mark, stay with us. We'll be back with more in a little while after this short break.
Baby, what are you going to do? There's a war going on now, and they blame it on you and me. Talk about safety, freedom, democracy. I don't believe them. You know, if they want my vote, they got to try a little bit more harder. You can't talk peace when you're making war. Too much of this hot gossip.
Something going on, a riot going on. But to the crack of dawn, I'm going through, gone.
We got to get down,
yeah.
Right now. Get on up and shut this shit down.
Shut down.
It's much more than black and blue. It's death and destruction. And how much does it cost?
Burning up the roof, you're lying on the truth. You got the guy in proof, you got a fool to do. So who the hell is you to tell them what to do? I'm not backing a bit of what you have a bit. You hot gossip. I hear you talking loud. Can you hear me now? Can't hear you now. You try to sell us out. What is that about? They're trying to blow us up. Government, what's up? What's up? What's up? Running people down.
got a sip. You ain't gonna trip. What you coming with? What you coming with?
I got the blues, all right. I feel so bad.
Bam!
People, we got to get all up.
We gotta get up.
And shut this down.
Bam!
'Cause it ain't right. And I know.
When they roll,
that there's something better out there.
Tell them in the song.
'Cause baby, I love you. And see the sky outside open up. And everything turns blue.
In the second hour, Passio begins with how we get back on track from the artificial world to the natural world. The artificial world is based on buying a lie, not thinking for ourselves, and fear versus gnosis. Marx says our world was not meant to be fail-proof, and he discusses the importance of learning by experience and taking responsibility. We'll talk about the ill effects of staying in the artificial world, which he says is a conscious plot. Our current worldview is diseased and people defend their servitude. We talk about exercising tough love for those who need to wake up from lower levels of consciousness, which is holding us back. Go to our website, redeyescreations.com, log in or click on subscribe to find out more about getting a membership. We have many gems in our archives that I know you'll enjoy. Next up on Red Eyes Radio, we have Ashoria S., Carl Munk, Anthony Peake, Andrew Goff, Joseph Apgo, Josh Reeves, Sonia Barrett, Dean Clifford, Barbara Hand Clough, Håkan Blomqvist, Gerard Williams, Paul Levy, Laird Scranton, and Louise Turi. Lots of interesting and important material coming up for you shortly. But next up now, we have Hour 2 with Mark Passio. Stay with us.